Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. This is your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Dulcy Ben East from Kahiltna Birchworks. Is that the business name I'm supposed to use, Dulcy, as that comes out of my mouth? I'm thinking, is that the right one?
It works well. Okay. We're also known as Alaska Wild Harvest.
Alaska Wild Harvest.
And that's
Harvest.
Our LLC.
Okay. All right.
We confuse people.
Yeah. Well, that keeps them guessing, keeps them looking for more information, right? Well, Dulcy, thanks for joining me this morning. I always like to start my show by asking my guests to tell me a little bit about themselves, how they got to Alaska, connection to agriculture. Did you grow up on a farm somewhere, et cetera? So tell us about Dulcy.
I came to Alaska first in 1978 on a youthful adventure.
So many of my guests start their story that way. I love
know.
It.
it's wonderful. And I left for a little while, but I came back in 81 and stayed here and lived in Homer. And I got connected to the community down there, and I did start gardening for the first time in my life. I did not grow up on a farm.
Okay.
Actually, my parents did a backyard garden, and I remember loving that. And they were well into flowers and plants. But my adventure to Alaska didn't start there. And then I worked for Fish and Game, and I met Michael, my husband, in 1988. And we decided we wanted to live on his remote homestead.
Okay.
On the Kahiltna River.
Okay.
And to do that, we had to come up with a way to make a living.
Right.
So we both were working for Fish and Game, and I think basically we really loved that sort of seasonality of, you know, the Alaskan year and the spring coming. And we started thinking about tapping the trees out on the homestead, because it was, of course, in the middle of the boreal forest. This is out on the Kahiltna River. So we're right in the middle of the Susitna Valley.
Okay.
And we had a neighbor out there who'd tapped maple before.
Okay.
And he said, you can tap these trees, you know. And so we started tapping them, and Michael started tapping them in late 80s. And then by 1990, we did our first little harvest.
Okay.
Out on the homestead. And the syrup was pretty dark and strong. There may be people out there who tried it back then. It wasn't the best, but we were still encouraged by it. We sold the entire crop in 91. We tapped 200 trees the second year. First year, 25. Second year, 200 trees. And we sold the entire crop of 700 bottles at the Alaska State Fair.
Okay.
So that was the beginning. And we are now preparing for our 29th harvest.
Wow.
Which I find difficult to believe.
I bet. Okay. So there's so much of that to break down and so many questions to be asked. But where was home, Dulcy? Where did you come from? What state?
I grew up in Delaware.
Delaware. Okay. Mm-hmm. So were you familiar with, are there maple trees back there?
Maple trees. I remember visiting a maple syrup farm when I was very young.
Okay. But it wasn't something that you aspired to do.
It wasn't something I aspired to do at all. I had gone to college in biogeography and environmental studies. I have a master's in environmental studies. So I didn't have this was not part of the plan.
That's all right, because it seems to have turned out, as you said, 29 years
it's
later.
It's environmental studies in a major way. You know?
Well, and you said what sort of geography?
Biogeography.
Biogeography.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of geography involved in what you guys do in the sense of mapping out your trees and figuring out where you're going.
Yeah. There's a lot of geography involved in everything I came to find out.
I bet. Yeah.
It's
very good.
An interesting field. So, yeah. So it was a natural progression.
Yeah. Obvious. Very obvious track. I think that could be one of the themes of my Ag Matters shows is what did you set out to do and where are you now?
Right. Exactly. It was the dream of living on the homestead. I think that was really the prime mover. And we loved that. The harvest of we worked with salmon for Fish and Game. And, you know, it was just that seasonality of, you know, going out and the fish returning up the river and corresponds very nicely with the sap flowing in the spring and the whole seasonality of that is really.
So let's start there. Let's start with the sap starting to flow in the spring. It's kind of looking like a spring day outside today. Getting there, right? We're not there yet, but we're getting there. Yeah. So when does the sap start flowing in the trees?
Our average harvest start date is middle of April.
Okay.
We've seen sap at the end of March.
Okay.
And we have had seasons start as late as May 1st.
Okay.
I'm really hoping that doesn't happen because it messes with everything else we do. I think this year I'm expecting it to be right around average, middle of April start. There's a lot of snow up there. Talkeetna is where we tap the trees now.
Yep.
And there's really a lot of snow on the ground. And it takes a while for the sun to start melting wells around the trees and the ground starting to warm up enough for the sap to start flowing. And there's other factors. It's not just those factors. I mean, the length of the day, the trees seem to know that it's time to kick it in.
And that was going to be my question. What does the sap starting to flow, what does that mean? That the tree is waking up or that it's starting to... I don't know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, it is. It's waking up. It's the buds are starting to swell, and it needs the sugar for the photosynthetic process, basically.
Okay.
So every year the tree starts to, the roots start to bring the sap up the tree. And
okay, so what is the sap then in the tree? What is it? Is it... I mean, like, what is its function to the tree?
It brings the nutrients and sugars up into the tree so that it can make leaves, basically.
Okay.
So
it is.
It's really essential to photosynthesis.
Okay. And so I know the answer to this question, but just in case listeners are wondering, when you tap the tree, then you're not killing the tree, are you?
No, that would be terrible.
Right.
the idea is to whatever we harvest sustainably.
Right.
And... basically, what we've read in the research and what we've discovered over the years is we're probably not taking any more than about 10% of the sap going up at any one tree in any one year. And you tap in one spot one year, and then the next year you'll move around the tree to, 4 inches over and up, and you keep going around the tree. And the idea is that when you get back around, if you tap for that long, you're tapping into fresh wood.
Okay.
So it is sustainable. We tapped for 20 years on our homestead.
Wow.
And we did rotate. I don't think there's any tree out there that was tapped more than, say, 7 times. But we haven't been out there in 8 years now, but we go out there. It's our retreat. We go out there all the time. And I'm always looking at the forest and looking at the health of the forest. And I'm happy with what I see.
Good.
It's an old forest. So there's, of course, a certain amount of natural decay. But but it looks like a healthy old forest to
Good.
Me. So
Good.
I'm encouraged by that because we're basically the research. There hasn't been a lot done. There's tons of maple research out there. And there's now maple researchers that are also researching birch because they're kind of they're trying to encourage people who tap maple trees to also get into tapping birch because it just seems to follow. I don't think that's really very practical for most maple producers because they are tired from their maple harvest and it's a whole nother ball game and it's 2.5 times harder to do than maple.
And so in terms of like apples and oranges, how different are maple trees and birch trees? Are you talking about two completely different systems or is it similar enough or?
There's similarities, but there's some major differences in root pressure and stem pressure. So that like with maple trees, the sap starts to run, but but you almost have to have cold nights, warm days. Whereas with birch, once it starts, it pretty much keeps going unless you have a hard freeze and then it'll stop it. At least it won't come out the hole. It'll continue to go up the tree. But there, it really is different. And these researchers at University of Vermont and Cornell are really studying it. And it's actually really cool because they've used a lot of our research because we're still the largest birch syrup producer in the world. And we're the only ones that have been doing it long enough.
Right.
And we're data freaks. So we keep data on every harvest that we've ever done
to
a large degree. And So we've worked a lot with these people back east. And
that's great.
And they share their research with us, which is really nice for us. You know, like where on the tree does it make the most sense to tap?
Right.
You know, is it lower down? Is it higher up? Does it matter? And there's all, so they're doing research that I would love to see done up here, but
right.
But it isn't. There's a little bit of research being done in Fairbanks,
okay.
at UAF.
Right, right. So a quick interruption to remind listeners that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Dulcie with Kahiltna Birch Works, or Alaska Wild Harvest. We're talking about birch syrup and tapping trees. So a month from now, you'll be out there tapping trees, and how many, Dulcie, how many trees are you going to tap?
This year, we will tap around 10,000 trees.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, that's a lot of trees.
That sounds like a lot of trees.
Yeah. And 8,000 of those are on a tubing and vacuum system.
Okay.
So
describe that to
it
us.
It is it's a network of blue lines that run through the woods. And what you have is a tap in a tree, a drop to a lateral line, and that lateral line runs into a main line.
Okay.
So it's like a pipeline system.
Yeah.
But it goes from a tiny, tiny tubing to much larger tubing. And then the main lines all run into a vacuum pump, which basically creates a vacuum. It doesn't suck the sap out of the trees.
Okay.
But it creates a vacuum so that the sap will flow more easily.
Okay. And that's to replace the traditional system, which is
tap and pail.
Yeah, so just a bucket hanging
exactly.
off of a tree. Yeah.
And we still do some. We still do, this year we'll do at least a couple thousand because we like to.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there's some pros and cons. I think for us, it's the way it was traditional for us. We always
sure.
tapped the trees in that way. The tubing and vacuum is more efficient and it's ecologically better. It's you're not having as much impact on the forest floor
okay.
itself. And it's fuel efficient because the way we collect
right.
is by snow machine or six-wheeler
yeah.
or whatever. And
or
you're
foot.
Out there or on foot, right. And I mean, it's hard on people, too.
Yeah.
But we will still have two. We call them sap suckers, people who will walk, you know, from tree to tree. And we do sort of suck the sap out of the pails for those people. And what that gives us is a real indication of how the sap's running.
Sure.
Because once you have it all hooked to tubing and vacuum,
you don't really
you can't
know.
See what
yeah.
each tree is doing.
Okay.
So this is really a good connection. And I always tap a bunch of trees right around our facility, mile one on the Talkeetna Spur.
Right.
Welcome to stop by.
Yeah.
But I always tap a few around the facility so I can keep track of what's going on because I'm not so much out in the woods anymore.
Okay.
I go out now and then, but I'm not. I'm the syrup maker. I'm up all night making the syrup.
So once the sap starts running and the vacuum system is working and the all that's happening, how long is the sap harvest?
It averages 3 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's three crazy intense
weeks
okay.
where we're working. The people who go out in the woods by 7 in the morning and then I'm up making syrup off until 3 a.m. So
wow.
it's almost a 24-hour process during harvest.
Okay.
Because we take the sap from each day's harvest and turn it into syrup. The
right
sap
then.
Does not
it doesn't
really
sit.
Doesn't
okay.
sit.
Okay.
Now we have started to freeze sap to bottle our birch water.
Okay.
Which is our newest product.
Yeah.
It's bottled birch sap. It's we call it birch water because a lot of people think of sap as something sticky.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because it doesn't look like what you think of when you think of sap,
it
right?
It doesn't at all.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me how many people don't realize that the sap from a maple tree, too. Maple has about 3% sugar. Birch has about 1%. So really, you are getting water with trace minerals and micronutrients.
Okay.
And a trace amount of sugar.
Yeah.
So it's it's hugely popular in Europe, and it has been for many years. I think traditionally it's been consumed all over the globe in northern climates.
Okay.
But there's been a real intense interest in now for functional beverages, which are beverages that are good for you
yeah.
and not full of sugar.
Right.
And
tastes good.
And tastes good.
Yeah.
Right. And so we infuse ours with wild blueberries, lingonberries, and chaga.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's available right here in Palmer, isn't it? I've seen it advertised a couple
Non-essentials
spots.
Non-essentials is carrying
right next door.
Yep, and in Anchorage a few places, but right here in Palmer, I think it's just non-essentials at
okay.
this point.
Is it on the menu at Turkey Red?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. That's
Thank
what I thought.
Thank you for reminding me. Yes, you can buy it at Turkey Red.
Two of my
Red.
Favorite places to go in Palmer, and I was thinking they both carry it. Very
and
good.
I did hear recently that Vagabond Blues is interested, so
oh,
I'm
cool.
going to go talk to the owner there and see if she is. So,
very good.
Yeah.
All right. So getting back to that, you're going to tap 10,000 trees, and that's that sap that comes out of the tree, you are turning into syrup immediately. Mm-hmm. So 10,000 trees are going to produce how much syrup?
Okay. So this is
or
an
sap,
easy way.
Then,
how much
yeah,
sap?
Yeah.
Right. 10,000 trees on a good day will give us, this is the easiest way to do it, 10,000 gallons of sap.
Okay.
That's kind of high. It usually isn't quite that much. But in any one day, we will bring in close to 10,000 gallons of sap because we also have people in the area collecting sap for us.
Okay.
So we'll bring in 10,000 gallons of sap. Our evaporator, which boils the sap to syrup, will only do 250 gallons an hour. So if you divide that out, you get 40 hours a day. Doesn't work.
There aren't that many.
There aren't
hours
that
in
many.
Day.
I know.
Once again, I'm not good at math, but that doesn't add up.
That does not add up. Right. So we use what's called a reverse osmosis.
Okay.
The sap is run through the reverse osmosis before we boil it. And that takes the sap down to about 1,000 gallons of sap at 10% sugar.
Okay. Instead of what you'd said was 1%, right?
1% sugar, 10,000 gallons. Okay. So now we've reduced it to 1,000 gallons. Manageable in the evaporator. That'll take 4 or 5 hours, plus filtering and all the other things you have to do to make the syrup. But that's the process, and it's pretty essential at any level of production with birch to use reverse osmosis to get that quantity down.
Yeah. Yeah,
and concentrate. It's also more fuel efficient. The evaporator burns 16 gallons of diesel fuel an hour, so the less you can use it, the better.
Yeah, very good. Mm-hmm. All right, so now you've taken it from sap down to syrup, and having visited the facility there before in Talkeetna or on the highway, the first sap that comes out of the tree is pretty special stuff, right? It's like it's almost like, and I know this, it never occurred to me that this is true, but there's like grades,
yes,
right,
absolutely,
based on when it's harvested.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. The first sap, the first day's harvest, we bottle as our reserve.
Yeah.
And it is going to be the lightest and sweetest of the harvest.
Okay.
And I mean, it's not everybody's favorite. So the way we grade our syrup is more by calling it the run, which run it is. So first run, early run is the first 10 days of harvest. Mid run is the transition between the early and the late part of harvest. And late run is the end of the harvest, usually the last week or so. And, you know, everybody has their preferences. And so what we do at our place in the summer, we do a taste and tour. Where people can taste the different runs.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how many people like we sell a lot of reserve. We put it in a fancy bottle, and it's delicious and sweet and amazing. And first run is probably the most popular, which is the early part of the harvest. It's a little more complex in flavor. And then mid run just gets even more so. And late run is like the hardcore stuff. It's the dark stuff. It's the cooking syrup. It's where you're going to get your robust complex flavors, sometimes of chocolate, coffee, cherry, fruity, and it varies from year to year.
Okay.
And I do tell people it's a little bit like making wine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, you shouldn't expect every bottle to taste the same.
Exactly.
Right?
Or every year to taste the same.
Yeah. And that I think that's some of the beauty of local food and food that's harvested nearby and that has a story like this, because it's not just cookie cutter the same every time.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Very good. So one more interruption to remind folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Dulcie Ben East, and we are talking about birch syrup and tapping trees and all of that. Dulcie, before I forget, let's tell people where they can go online to find more information, to figure out how to come visit you this summer, et cetera.
Yeah, we actually built a wonderful new website in October.
Okay. A lot of hard work.
It was a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
AlaskaBirchSyrup.com.
Okay.
It also is AlaskaWildHarvest.com.
Okay.
Just to keep
either
people
way,
on their
you can get there.
Toes, but both ways you can get there.
Okay.
There's a nice section on the our taste and tour and our gift shop. We have a really nice gift shop
you
up
do.
There.
Yeah. When will that open?
We'll open mid-May.
Okay.
So that's why I'm hoping for a harvest that starts before May 1st.
Right. It all happens at
oh
once,
oh, my gosh.
Right?
The tourists are knocking on the door
and you're like, we're not ready.
I know. We actually have people coming in no matter how many signs you put up. You know,
oh,
you leave
I
your
bet.
Clothes signs up, people are coming in. And
I
every
bet.
Year they're coming in earlier and earlier
because
the tourists seem to be coming to Alaska.
I saw a tour bus on the road today and I thought, is that someone learning to drive the bus?
It might be.
Okay.
This is a little early.
Right?
But
it's still March.
I know. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's easy to find. We're at mile one on the Talkeetna Spur Road. We do a tour pretty much anytime you want. It's not a scheduled thing. You come in, you can taste all of our products. And we wild harvest berries as well. We wild harvest chaga. And we make a variety of berry jams and sauces as well. So.
Yeah. And lots of products available there in the gift shop. I know one of my favorite things is your mustard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
Orange mustard.
Yeah, the birch orange mustard. That's one of my favorites.
And we have a new wild sauce.
Oh, really?
Which is highbush cranberry and rose hip. And it's like a ketchup. It's a wild ketchup. And it's or a grilling sauce, and it's wonderful.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah.
Do they have that next door? Because I know Denise carries a lot.
Yes, they do.
Okay, very good. I'll have to try that one out.
Yeah.
I would say one of the other products that I think you guys are famous for are the birch caramels, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so we have a whole line of value-added birch products. And our birch caramels, we're pretty well known for those.
Yeah.
And our birch almond brittle. The confections are great. Probably next to the birch syrup itself, our biggest sellers are our birch caramels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to try them if you haven't had them yet. They make great, great gifts to send outside, Christmas presents. Remember, Johanna and I came up there before the holidays to buy a big bag.
Right. We need caramels.
Yes. Yep, because we'd missed you at some of the shows. So where are some of the locations that folks can find your products if they don't make it up to the shop in Talkeetna? Where else can they find your...
Well, here in Palmer, it's definitely non-essentials. Denise carries pretty much everything we make. In Anchorage, Natural Pantry.
Okay.
Alaska Wildberry Products, a lot of the gift shops. A lot of the downtown gift shops carry our products. And Summit Spice and Tea.
Yep.
Carries a good many of them. I think I have a good list on the website,
places
you can find our products. And
can you buy them
you
from the website?
Buy them online.
Perfect.
We have a lot of chefs who use our birch syrup, and you can. Well, we're going to start doing a little feature on the chefs and the breweries locally who are using our products.
They're putting it in their beer.
They're using it in their beer.
Oh, very
so
good.
So Denali Brewing up there in Talkeetna does a One Tree.
Oh, okay.
They call it their One Tree.
I've never tried that.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
And a couple of breweries in Anchorage, one of them just ordered some, and then Alaska Brewing always seems to have a beer made with birch syrups
us.
So. Yeah.
Very good. So you guys have done, this is your 29th season, you said, right?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of years. And 29 years ago, are you where you thought you would be 29 years ago? Did you think it was going to last this long and be this successful? And
I don't think I had a clue.
Oh, okay.
I think I was just rolling with it. And at that time, you know, we were starting a family and living on the homestead and just thinking in the present.
Yeah.
And really not thinking about where this could go. And I think it was really more like 2005, probably almost 15 years in, before we started thinking, you know something? This may not work out here on the homestead. We need to grow.
Yeah.
And that's when we started looking for property off the homestead. And that's when we found our place, Talkeetna. We actually didn't move there until 2009, but...
Okay.
We realized to grow this business, it needs growing.
Yeah.
And you know, to someday to make a living, to really make a good living at this and maybe someday retire.
Right.
We need to do something else. So that's when we really expanded at that point. We went from tapping 3,000 trees to 10,000.
Mm-hmm. And are you where you want to be? Is this it? Are you at the top of the threshold or are you still in expansion mode?
Well, this birch water project has potential.
Okay.
Birch syrup, I think we're kind of there.
Okay.
Birch water really does have a lot of potential. There's
whole unique
Asian market that's like begging for
more.
It's just the logistics of doing that in Alaska are very, very tough. There's no bottling facility, really. We would have to start from scratch and create it. So it's almost a little bit like starting another business.
Yeah.
I have mixed feelings about that.
I bet you do.
We're not jumping in with both feet, but we're kind of testing the waters.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I tasted it for the first time at the fair this year, and it was incredible, refreshing and light, but had a really unique flavor that kind of lasted in your mouth, like, oh, what? I want another drink of that. You know, what was it? So
it is really refreshing and energizing, and nothing better than drinking it right out of the tree, but if you can't do that all the time, you know, this is the best way to go.
The next best thing.
The next best thing.
You can't really
get
it anywhere else, right?
No.
I mean, no.
No, seasonally, tap your trees, drink it out of the tree. Absolutely. I encourage people to do that all the time. It's just so good. It's like a spring tonic. There's nothing like it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in that regard then, well, I'm just thinking about, you know, you guys have been doing this for 29 years and you've kind of paved the way for this industry. You mentioned you're the largest birch syrup producer in the world, which is kind of a big deal. And there's been some other, you know, birch syrup companies in Alaska come and go, and some of them have stuck around. But do you see the industry, you know, growing as a whole, or do you think that this is something that you want to see more people get into? Is there room for more people?
I definitely think there's room for more people, and we're always encouraging people to get into it. We're actually equipment suppliers and equipment and supplies. So if people want to get into tapping their trees, they should contact us. We can get all the supplies you need. We can give you quotes on equipment and that kind of thing, too. We have a producer in Fairbanks who's very successful. They're making wonderful products, and a small producer down in Homer right now. The only other commercial producers in the state that I know of at this time.
Yeah.
But there's been as many as 9. I think it's not particularly easy to do.
Right. No.
But I think that there is a demand and there's room for more.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I can just imagine getting into it would have a person would have an incredible amount of questions, and the learning curve's got to be super steep. And your guys' 29 years of experience is just incredibly invaluable. But so are you like a birch syrup consultant? Do you have that title behind your name on your business card?
I'm thinking that's how I might be able to retire.
There you go. Well, and I will say too, on your website, there's a ton of information. And if a person were to come to the tour facility there in Talkeetna and sit through the tour and watch the videos, you guys are a wealth of information, and you seem to be very generous in sharing it.
We are. And people always call us mid-season and say, what do I do? What's this? And we're always happy to help them if we have the time. Cooperative Extension does classes also. So check their schedule. I think they're doing actually one this week sometime.
Okay.
Kind of a preseason startup, and they'll do one usually right around the season as well.
Okay.
So,
okay. Very good. Well, Dulcie, the half an hour always just flies by, especially when we have a super fun guest like you who knows, you've probably forgotten more about your topic than we will ever know. So
that's true.
Yeah. Alaska Wild Harvest and Kahiltna Birch Works, right? Did I get those right? Yeah. So look you guys up online and follow the harvest this season. And thank you so much for joining me on Ag Matters Radio this morning.
Thanks a lot, Amy.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.